Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John charms the lunch lady and makes a case for flying cars. Meanwhile, I irritate my teachers and put a tiny camera in my ear. Plus a conversation about affirmation, kindness, and high school yearbooks. Today's episode is not sponsored by dogs. Like cats, except they actually care about you. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
Hello, folks. My name is Derek Greer, and I'm reaching out to fellow pastors and church leaders just like you to join me and other Christian leaders and organizations throughout the nation as we come together on June 8th and 9th for National Unity Weekend. Together, we will show the love of Jesus as we serve our communities on Saturday, June 8th, and then preach from a shared text on Sunday, June 9th. To register, go to unityweekend.com. That's unityweekend.com to join us as we unite the church and unite the nation.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Buckle up, Buttercup. It's Talk About That in 2023.
What did you think we would be doing in 2023 when you were a kid? Could you even fathom it?
No. 2023. Because you don't really think like, you don't think of yourself in your 40s. It seems so distant back then. Like my kid right now thinks
I'm
ancient.
What did you think of a 40? That's what I was going to say. What did you think of a 40-year-old?
She can't conceive of it.
No.
And she doesn't know that
she
I
can't
feel...
believe you're still walking around. That you're not creaking as you move, which you do creak. You tend to creak.
Like on the inside, she doesn't know I feel just like her. Like I feel like a little kid still.
Like a little girl.
No, just a kid.
We're getting into some deep stuff already.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, there's a thing of like, I remember the year 2000 was a big thing. And you would see all these things in the 80s when I was growing up about like, there's going to be flying cars. And I knew that was a lie. Even as a kid, I was like, no, there won't. And here's why. If you get into a fender bender on the road, okay. If you get into a fender bender in the air, you all die.
Yeah, but like, or it's the same thing as riding a motorcycle, isn't it?
Like, what? First of all, like, how would you regulate a flying car? Like, a fleet of flying cars, just random people. First of all, you got to make them affordable. But then you have to figure out, how do you track? Because they have to, like, flight plans for planes. You have to know who's taking off from where. You can't just be like, I think I'm going to fly to the store real quick. What if everybody's going to the store and you run into them in the air?
And why do you need to fly to the store?
Right.
Because you're way above everything. Remember Back to the Future where they go to the future?
Wait a minute. Hold on.
And they're flying. That's what it's like. It was like just random chaos.
Yeah.
But there were like little street signs and dividers.
There were little like lights. You're right.
Yeah.
So you're saying there's a system that you've come up with that.
You know, my theory, and I'm maybe a listener out there is some sort of scientist or developer or genius or Elon Musk or someone with a lot of funds. But I really think the whole thing is about the Earth's magnetism.
Okay.
I think what you need is if you could somehow press against, like counter magnet against the Earth's magnetism at a certain rate, if you could dial it in, then you really could just
hover.
You just hover. Yeah. So that it could never fall. I mean, unless you step outside of the hovercraft. But that would be one way. And then if you could dial in the Earth's magnetism up and down, like you're not even, then you can go higher, lower without really a lot of thrust. Guys,
I think you need to work on dialing in your own magnetism. Because you've just bored our entire audience to tears.
Has no one ever thought of this before but me? I'm sure there's people out there.
Talk about magnets. But yeah, that's one I knew would not happen. Even as a kid, I was like, this won't happen.
You're such a cynic, man.
And the other one was, people won't even eat meals anymore. We'll just take these capsules. Because I was like, we don't eat for nutrition. Even then I knew there's a lot of reasons people eat. It's not like, I just need to get exactly right. the number of calories and nutrition that I need.
Nutrition.
I can get it all in this one capsule and I'm good for the day.
I can go back to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want to stop working so we can eat.
Yeah.
I want to. Yeah. I mean, eating is recreational, which is part of my problem.
That lunch break, when you're on, when you work a regular job, that lunch break is like an oasis. You're living between those.
Oh, yeah. When I was a teacher, shoot, man.
It was everything.
I mean, and they would carb load you in that cafeteria.
Oh, yeah. They're just trying to get you through the
day. And I would always engage the lunch ladies and find out what's going on in their lives.
Sometimes you got engaged to a lunch lady?
No.
Wait a minute. I don't know anything about Laura's background. This is fascinating.
Let me tell you something. She would revolutionize school lunches. But...
No, so how would you engage the lunch ladies?
Well, hey, how's it going? Sometimes they share like stuff.
I feel like you're
on.
Patting yourself on the back for just talking to like a commoner. You're like, I don't know. A lot of people wouldn't talk to the lunch ladies, but I was like, they're people, right?
No, I wasn't like that at all. I actually cared about lunch.
That's
ladies.
A lovely hairnet, Lois.
And like, I'd they'd ask me to pray for something going on in their family, or whatever. Yeah. Oh, what are you gonna do now? You gonna make a joke about that too?
You think
you got nothing?
Did
do
they
you?
Ask for the prayer? Or did you go? Hey, anything I can pray for you about? Were you right looking for another scoop of mashed potatoes?
That's what I'm saying. They would load me up.
Okay.
But I wasn't being kind.
It wasn't like a quid prayer quo.
Quid. He just said quid prayer quo.
It was, what were you, that, you were trying to get an extra potato cake.
If I had that speed.
Or one of those like, the rectangular pizza. What about that rectangular pizza in lunchrooms?
Not only were those my favorite, those were such my favorite that my mother-in-law, whenever we first got married, she knew how much I loved the square pizza. Even we called it square pizza.
It's not square.
But it was rectangular. We called it square in school we weren't learning about shapes, apparently.
That's the problem. That's what I'm saying. This shows the failure of the American education system. We called that square pizza.
Maybe so much square pizza.
Yeah. It's square just like Nebraska. No.
She bought me
like
2 sheets of frozen square pizza for Christmas one year.
Really?
Yeah.
Where did you keep them? They're gigantic.
I don't remember. We probably broke them into smaller squares.
You bought a chest freezer just to house the pizza.
It was awesome. That's when I knew I'd married into the right family.
So, that's funny.
No, they would load me up at lunch, man. And that, I think it was fourth period is when I would come back after having... So many mashed potatoes.
What's the productivity level after? Teachers always talk about that. The productivity level after lunch just goes through the floor, right?
If you're in my fourth period class, meaning it's lunch period, like that's a great class to be in. It's longer because I'm going to amend maybe.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to hurry things up because I want us to get to lunch faster. And then I want us to come back
to lunch. So teachers are thinking about it too. Not even educationally. You're just like, I got to get to lunch.
I got to do this. And these kids are literally on the gravy train right now. Like, they're going to benefit from being in my fourth period class. If you come back, I'm like, you know what, guys?
You don't think about your teachers when you're a kid about them having lives outside of you. But as an adult, I think now, I go, gosh, I was really hard on my teachers because I was a class clown kind of, and I would just make snarky comments because I'm trying to get attention or I'm trying to be just a goof. But I'm insecure, and I'm sure I derailed a lot. I got a lot of zeros for the day.
No,
you ever get one of those?
No.
Oh, yeah. And I don't even know if those add up. Maybe it's the reason I'm where I'm at.
I thought that you...
I averaged a zero. No.
Johnny, 0 plus 0 is 0, so don't worry about that.
Nothing from nothing means nothing.
I really thought that you would have been more of a, not a rule follower, but more of a, I don't want to disappoint the person in leadership.
It didn't happen a lot, but there was times I couldn't hold in the thing that I needed to say and make the cool kids laugh.
Yeah.
The cool kids didn't hang out with me after they laughed.
Right.
They were just like, that's a good one. Hey, let's not hang out.
You stay on your side.
Yeah.
Right.
But there were sometimes I would just have these, and I still, that's the thing. That's the reason I do what I do. But you have these thoughts as a kid and you go, oh, this is so inappropriate. It's like the church giggles. Mm-hmm. You have to say it. Some people don't say it. I said it. But yeah, I remember them saying to me, you get a zero for the day more than once. Different teachers. Or like permanent record. That was a big threat that we got as a kid. This will go on your permanent
record.
I never got that threat, but I wonder if they're, where is my permanent record? Wouldn't you love to look at it?
I'd love to see it.
Gosh.
I did find my junior yearbook.
Yeah.
The other day, and read, because I cleaned out the garage for 2 days.
2 days.
It was bad.
Yeah.
It needed a lot of reorganization, mm-hmm. and there were several goals. One is to park 3 cars in there. People don't park in their garage. I want to park in my
right.
garage. Like, we grew up not having a garage. I like to park in my garage during winter months.
3 cars, huh?
My mom lives with us, so yes, I park her car in there.
Mm-hmm.
And also the exercise equipment for my wife and daughter.
Yeah.
Even though we have a treadmill that nobody uses, and I hate treadmills. I want to run outside.
Yeah.
But they use the weight bench.
You
want to
run outside just from seeing a treadmill? Let me out.
I just run from the treadmill. Get away from it.
Yeah.
So I have now, it was a lot of Tetrising. But yes,
yeah.
I threw a bunch of stuff away. But yes, mm-hmm. but in that I found, not only do we have all the exercise equipment and the cars now, and you can, it's fun.
But you found the old yearbooks.
The old yearbook. And that is probably that's what permanent records really are. You don't really care about your grades now.
Did you look through it to see what the other kids wrote in it? Was that part of your journey?
Yeah. I want to see what they were saying. Because I have this whole theory that hindsight is nothing like 2020. It's a horrible expression.
Oh, no. It's terrible.
You don't remember yourself accurately.
We've talked about that before. There was an interview that I listened to, and it was a guy that's talking about his experience with his therapist, and they said that your childhood memories are not what you think, whereas it's like pulling a book off the shelf, looking at it, and then putting it back. In fact, it's way worse. When you pick up the book, you've altered it. You've made changes to the book, and then you put it back. So the next time you pick up that book, it's an altered version of that.
Yeah.
Every time you touch the book, you're rewriting it.
And those of us who are extra introspective then have rewritten a lot.
Yeah, or you're making yourself more of a hero or more of a villain.
Yeah.
Or more of a neutral party if something really bad was happening that you don't want to admit you were part of. You're like, yeah, but I was just there. You're protecting. You're the press secretary. We've talked about that before, about how in your mind, you're more of a press secretary defending.
Uh-huh.
You're giving the tarted out version of what happened. You're going, well, look, there was a lot going on.
Yes, I'm going to take questions.
I'm going to take questions eventually, but let me get this out. Yeah.
Right. Right now, there's still an active investigation, and we cannot comment on that.
But what did people think of you? People expected you to be successful, right? You were class president.
Johnny,
let's get that out of the way.
That's a big enough question.
You were on the success train early on.
You're on a series of questions that it's going to require us to take just a short break. So we'll be right back.
Hello, folks. My name is Derek Greer, and I'm reaching out to fellow pastors and church leaders just like you to join me and other Christian leaders and organizations throughout the nation as we come together on June 8th and 9th for National Unity Weekend. Together, we will show the love of Jesus as we serve our communities on Saturday, June 8th, and then preach from a shared text on Sunday, June 9th. To register, go to unityweekend.com. That's unityweekend.com to join us as we unite the church and unite the nation.
Johnny, what is success really?
Is that what this is the start of the essay question? What is success to you?
If I wrote an essay on success in high school, it would have been well written.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. You know what? What I got was, I don't know. I'm feeling a little seen, little vulnerable.
Okay.
I don't know if I want to say all the things.
Mm. Do you feel like you've achieved what people in your high school thought you would achieve?
Man, I think about that sometimes because
because the truth is it doesn't matter at all. You don't have contact with these people. That's another thing teachers always say. You are spending all your time trying to impress these people that you will never see again.
Yeah.
Please don't do it. And you can't get out of your own head to do it. You can't listen to that. You can't know what you don't know.
Well, because you have no choice but to live among the peers that you have.
Right.
In every season of life.
It's like people try to tell me, stop hanging out with John. You're not going to see him ever again once your inevitable blood feud.
Right.
And I don't listen.
You never do.
I still feel like I'm making moves to I wonder what John would think of this. You know what? Who cares?
Because whenever you and I fall out.
Yeah. It's going to be big.
We're going to have 250 awkward recordings out there on the internet.
Yeah, they're locked in carbonite.
Yeah, it's like, wow, those guys used to be
amber.
Good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And now just slashed Johnny's tires.
It's a painful PTSD every time I listen. I'll be a subscriber and a patron, but...
You got to.
Because I want to know what you're saying. We'll have separate rival podcasts to talk crap about each other.
Like Talk and That.
Yeah.
And they're on separate networks and everything.
Yeah.
Gosh, that'd be amazing. No, I often look back. What really haunts me, I think, about those days is I was known as the Christian kid, even at a Christian school, because I would speak in chapel.
Right.
And I had I would share my faith a lot. I look back at that and think of it as very inauthentic and insincere. And I do. I'm real hard on that high school, John. And a lot of it was because I had all these false equivalencies and false humility and all these other things about, you know, about especially with girls and everything in those days. You know, we were not in a I was not being taught about dating and things the same thing. My parents were giving me good advice.
Yeah.
But like in other places, I wasn't getting great advice from the church. Well-meaning, but just a different age, you know. And so I found myself in a lot of bad situations. And I look back and go, wow, what a hypocrite, mm-hmm. you know, to have these technicalities that you adhere to. But then the truth is, though, grace actually teaches me that whatever I was saying about God or not saying about God was not made more or less true by my own actions. I would rather be a better reflection. But honestly, the things they wrote, I mean, who's going to write, hey, you're a big jerk and a hypocrite?
That's true. They're signing your yearbook, right. So they're not going to write a hateful thing.
But there was a lot of things written there like, hey, you know, really appreciate your influence kind of thing and feel like you're sincere. I was like, man. And I look back and go, I probably was sincere.
Yeah.
That's really why is that so painful for me to say?
Yeah.
I want to paint myself worse. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, like, Grace says you don't have to do that because you could be like, look, it just was what it was.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's anyone who's truly insincere in high school. Like, you know, they're probably all sincere.
What's interesting about the yearbook is we stop doing that thing. It's a great, we've talked about ritual before and tradition and how we spent a lot of our background in religious culture trying to almost escape that. Like, right. We'd hate all the weird walls that we put around God. So we're going to be the church that lets kids wear tank tops to church, or we're going to be the whatever. And we're not going to do all the weird religious stuff that this other church does. But sometimes, like, tradition and liturgy, like, it has a real, like, I was thinking when you said that about the yearbook, we stopped doing that. But it's almost a way, people talk about give people their flowers while they're still alive.
Yeah.
That's a way to do that. And we stopped doing it. Like, we should have a yearbook every year.
Yeah.
For adult life. Because, like, you know how I feel about you. We talk about things, and we're very open. We're such mama's boys, and we just, like, yeah. Our emotions are right on our sleeve. And for better or for worse, that's just how I live. I'm very easy to take advantage of because of that. Like, I feel like there's people see me coming like, all right, well, I know how to make Johnny feel insecure because he's already told me all of his hot-button issues.
Yeah.
Like, I just have friends that just know how to do that to me. But at the same time, I feel like, we need more of that in life where – like people, I've heard of people who know that they're terminal and they have their funeral in advance or whatever, so people can say what they want to say about them while they're still alive. There's like a whole movie about that. What was it called? I think it was called Get Low, and Robert Duvall was in it. And it's a true story. It's based on a true story about a guy who was going to be dead in a year. So he's like, I want to have my funeral now. And, a yearbook is that thing where it's like, you get to see the esteem. When I left Home Depot, it's the closest thing. When you leave Home Depot, you have your apron, and they take your apron and they sign it. I forgot about that.
You still have it?
I kept it.
Wow.
Even though that was like a job that I could not wait to get out of.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like I had a ton of great connections there. But in a way, when I saw that apron, there were people who signed that and wrote like nice things that I was like, I didn't think that person even like knew who I was. So that was kind of cool.
I think the problem with it being annual, even though it's called an annual, is... you know, the reason that junior and senior year stuff, a lot of seniors are writing to me who were leaving, it's a shift out of a season.
Yeah.
For example, my teaching years, which weren't many, I taught for 4 years before I went into full-time other stuff. But like there was one of the teacher admin trainings at the central office, and they did a drawing and they gave away a Blount County Schools mug.
Yeah.
And it says dedicated to the service of children on it. And it's all faded. We were going through and purging all the cabinets. It was just a big purge at the house, man.
Right.
And she goes, let me guess, we're going to need to keep this Blount County Schools mug.
Sure.
And I was like, absolutely. Because it just reminds me of a formative season.
Uh-huh.
You know, like that was important. Those years were important. I mean, I'm still so involved in history and stuff because of that path that I took. And I've looked back with fondness over the kids. Sometimes I'll see a few of the kids on Facebook and all that. They'll reach out. Hey, Mr. Driver, what's going on? You know, I think sort of some totems, not for the purpose of elevating, and that's why I don't really care. You know, I'm curious what people thought of me in those days. It doesn't really matter. But more like finding some appreciation of those days for what they were. Like,
you should do it at the end of a season of something, not necessarily every year, but like, yeah, you should take like, I don't know. Yeah, you should take a moment, be like, hey, we're all going to meet at Buffalo Wild Wings, and we're going to talk about how we feel about each other.
Well, you know, I used to meet the kids in the leadership
and they'll
retreats.
Be like, I'm not going to make it.
I'm not. So you and I would do it.
Nobody would go.
We'd be like, I am there. I will say I've had dads do that when their daughters are getting married. You and I have both been part of those things.
Yeah.
Where they're about to gain a son-in-law. Mm-hmm. It's the opposite. Instead of all the things they know about you and are great,
right,
they want you to come in and speak things into the new son-in-law.
Right.
You know, like, hey, you know, this
here's
is
a blessing, or here's a,
right, welcome,
a challenge.
Right. If you hurt her, we're all going to hurt you, that kind of thing. I think that, remember the old Overdrive retreats with our student leaders?
Uh-huh.
I would often make them stand in a circle at the end, and it's so cheesy. Like you said,
I remember those.
No one wants to show up for this. Mm-hmm. If you invited them to Buffalo, it ended up being usually their favorite thing. They would eye roll, moan and groan until I got them started within 30 seconds. It's, hey, I want you to take, you know, just say nice things about each other.
Yeah.
Find something to affirm that's real and true about the people in the circle.
Yeah, don't wax flattery if it's not real.
Right.
But you can think of something good to say.
Yeah. And it's such like it's an exercise. In fact, I was on a call this morning for a possible book that I'll be doing with some people I've written with before. And they were talking about that in marriage, specifically like how a lot of men feel that like affirmation for men in marriage, and I'm not meaning to be stereotypical, this is not
right.
it's men and women alike, it needs to go both ways. Just for their story, this is what they were talking about.
Uh-huh.
That like it would transform his life.
Yeah.
For her to be like, hey, I see, I'm not just seeing all the things you're not getting right.
Yeah.
Like I'm actually cheering for you, and I believe in you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm not sure it's male, female, husband, wife that matters, but I think that's just human.
Yeah.
And I think that we think that that's inauthentic because you're waiting for that to happen organically. And some of us do that more organically. You and I are more prone to be like, hey, man.
Yeah,
you know,
but I'm not great at it with my.
No, you're not.
I'm not great at it with my wife as I could be, probably. Because you just assume like, well, she knows all this.
Yeah.
And so you forget sometimes, you do take for granted. I try, but yeah, I do think that I could do better at it. But like you said, you want it to be organic because it's like, this is love.
Right.
We don't want to plan some grand gesture, and yet, you know, yeah, you do. That's how you show somebody that you really care about them.
Yeah. Real love is going to have a lot more planning, intentionality. Intentionality is a great modern word.
Yeah.
But what it really means to a lot of people, if they've used other words for it, like planning, is it's like, well, this is boring. If you really cared.
Right. It's the opposite of spontaneity.
Right.
Yeah.
You would naturally explode with these things all the time if like feelings are the only things we have. Feelings are one thing that we have. But
right.
Gut reactions are another thing. Thoughts are another thing. Like we're in motion and very fluid with a lot of different things. And so feelings need to have a place. But sometimes, Johnny, if you don't tell your feelings where they need to go, they'll tell you where to go. And then you're just reactive. So, come on.
I've been told where to go before. I'll tell you that right now. We need to figure out some kind of tradition where people get their flowers. We need to start incorporating it, maybe into church life. Like maybe like you talk about reorganizing small groups every season or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe at the end of your small group season, you have to.
Yeah.
Give each other a blessing or go around.
It's a great idea. Actually, I think I will actually implement that because we're supposed to have encouragement and mutual encouragement happening in those groups, but at least at once a season when we all re-up.
Well, I just got to say, I don't feel very encouraged. No, I'm using my group's great. That's fine.
Well, maybe a lot of people don't. A lot of people are surprised. Like I was on another call today and someone paid me a compliment and I immediately deflected.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my friends who are Enneagram coaches, and he was just like only a six would find a way. He's a six too. Like that's master six work. Basically you just did to find a way to turn that compliment into something bad about yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna write the book, you know, Deflecting Compliments and Losing Friends by John Driver.
Yeah. Like that's, you know, like the opposite of the Dale Carnegie.
Right. And I think we don't, some of us don't know, it's really hard to let ourselves be loved.
How to deflect compliments and repel people.
There you go.
This is going to be a worst seller.
I've got, well, hey, Tony, it can't get any worse.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
No, it's, I think it's key. I mean, I do think, so there's a new record out.
Yeah.
And I know some listeners are going to roll their eyes at me, but I find comfort in some artists that I've been listening to since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Because I listen to some metal. I listen to a little bit of everything, Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
But like Stephen Curtis Chapman has a new record out.
Okay.
And you know, part of the deal with that particular family is all the loss.
Right. They've been through some challenges.
They're sort of like writings and it's not even like they're teaching you on it, but just watching them go through grief on that level. And then he writes a lot about it. Like, again, I'm a content guy. You know, some people are like, it's all about the melody, you know, and he's got great melodies and all that stuff. But he's got a song that could ring cheesy for some, but it also is kind of profound. He's basically like, if the world had one way to describe us, with one word to describe us, let that word be kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, kindness really is like a game changer.
Yeah.
That there are just times, and I think kindness in the face of unkindness is especially a game changer. It's what Proverbs says, that a soft answer turns away wrath. So like, that means you can only do that when wrath comes at you. And that's a super, I'm not good at that. Like, I generally have a reaction.
Yeah.
But you can actually change the environment. You can turn something into something else.
Yeah, yeah.
If you can get past the initial harshness or the initial wrath.
Yeah, that reminds me, I was reading a tweet today from, it's a quote from Eugene Peterson, who's great. He wrote, it's odd that a religion that carries the cross as its central symbol should produce a culture of people who consider suffering, whether it comes from a broken body or broken heart, a violation of their spiritual rights.
Wow.
So it's kind of to that point of like, we've gone in a few generations, we've built this people that like, it's become more about, you're infringing on this, so I now get to step out and be my least kind self because I have the right now. I've had my rights violated, so I get to now be the worst version of myself. It's okay to do that. It's like, it's so not okay. But yeah, we've lost our way a little bit when it comes to kindness, I think.
That's
fascinating. It feels like weakness to us.
No, it really does. And there's lots of quotes from
people. When it's really strength, it's like the ultimate strength.
Yep. It is.
It's like rebellion in a world that's just completely about its rights to be like,
interesting.
I'm going to waive that.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the other thing.
I think, and I found myself the last few months, even generally I evaluate how well my spiritual life is going by the time spent with God, you know, kind of thing. There was a couple days in the last month or so that lots of other people's pain, like, came at me in a way that I got to be present for,
mm-hmm.
like on a just like boom, 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 boom. And I kind of felt like, what have you evaluated your spiritual life, not just by your devotional time or your knowledge gained, those kinds of things, but what if another big part or even a bigger part of that was how much you got to share in the sufferings of others, which scripturally means you've shared in the sufferings of Christ. So if what you do unto another in a good way is doing unto Jesus, right? He said that if you give someone a cup of water, it's like you're giving a cup of water to Jesus. Then when someone else is sharing their hardships and you bear that with them, you actually are bearing then the sufferings of Jesus. I think we act like the sufferings of Jesus scripturally is only in some martyrdom way,
right?
Some denial of a faith expression,
right?
Or affirmation of a faith expression. Someone comes at you, they hold a gun. I mean, this is our childhood, right?
Yeah.
It, you know, and someone says, I mean, that wasn't our childhood. People talking to us about that scenario was a part of our childhood. And I mean, I should tell the kids all the time, it's way, way less likely that someone's ever going to kill you for being a Christian. The harder part's going to be you actually living as a believer,
mm-hmm.
not dying as one. It sounds cliche, but it's just very true. But, like, I think that there's, like, this joy of going, wow, I got to experience today the honor of a little just minutia of what Jesus bears with us for others.
Yeah, or we think of like, to the Eugene Peterson quote, we almost think of the cross as like this means to an end as a delivery, deliverance from suffering. But that's not really the point. It delivers us from the end result. It saved us from death and spiritual death. But suffering is like all throughout the New Testament.
Yeah.
The church is full of suffering and the fellowship of suffering and the fellowship of Christ's suffering. So somehow we've kind of, it's again, it's that Western view where we have our creature comforts. And so we've got to figure out how to make those okay. You know, so we do a lot of weird, mental gymnastics to resolve the early church's mindset with what we have now and pretend that it's the same. And it's really not. We've kind of morphed it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure you're going to find an equilibrium between the two places without, I think it's what you're seeing right now. Even when you talk about returning to liturgy or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a sense of overlaying a modern ethic onto the ancient realities of the gospel. They're not going to line up. Was it John Mark Comer in Live No Lies that talked about like, hey, in reality, the journey of Jesus was always towards a cross. If you're going to walk in the footsteps of Jesus, it's always towards a cross. Like it's towards more suffering, not less. That's a hard, hard message for us because it butts up against the gospel message of, and there's another song on that same record with Stephen Curtis Chapman, where he talks about growing up, I was told every day with Jesus is sweeter than the day before, and God's got a wonderful plan for your life, and these kind of the lines of it. He's like, and every single bit of it was true, but like, what do you do when those things don't line up? There's a whole lot of unfixables in your life, and I mean, I think, again, songs like that by established people in that sort of industry saying, hey, there has to be an evolution.
Yeah, it's not a Brady Bunch episode where just everything's good after 30 minutes. That's what was wrong with Christian cinema for so long. They all had to have some lightning, flip switch moment where this guy receives salvation and then his entire life changes for the better. I mean, some of these disciples that Jesus called to follow him, they had to go home and tell their family, and their family would disown them.
Yeah.
You know, like they knew what they were doing. It's like the founders signing the Declaration of Independence. They were signing their death warrant. It's a declaration of war. It's a declaration.
If we lose, this will be treason.
Right? Yeah. So it's like there's a heaviness to it. To me, it's about, because I've experienced a lot of suffering in my life, I feel like, maybe not, in the grand scheme of things, but I do feel like I've experienced some things. And to me, it's not about like a deliverance from suffering. It gives meaning to suffering.
Yeah.
Perspective to suffering. No, there's not suffering without like, it doesn't, first of all, it doesn't come without end, but also it's like, there's something to it.
Right,
I can see something being built because of it. More times than not. Sometimes you're just like, wow, this doesn't make sense to me. And I'm going to have some questions about this. But then, I see a lot of things where I go, man, I could see being really mad in the moment at that and having a lot of questions. And now 20 years later, I go, I see what was going on there.
You know?
You can't know that in the moment though. I don't know.
No. And you can't know without continuing forward.
Yeah.
Sadie and I were talking about that last night on a difficult situation. We were just driving and I was like, hey, this could be a moment to quit, or this can be a moment to build some inner strength and fortitude.
And she was like, I want to quit. Thank you for the option.
Well, and she did say, she was like, yeah, but it doesn't feel like I'm building inner fortitude. I was like, yeah, that's the thing with it. It won't feel like that in the moment. It can only become that over time. I mean, there are some things I've stuck with over time.
Yeah.
I'm talking years and years and years, that they don't feel like anything in the moment, but looking back stacked, one upon another, they become greater than the sum of their parts. I mean, if you just look at a brick, it's just a brick, you keep stacking them, you eventually have a house, I think it's how it works. I wasn't a civil engineer as much as...
Don't you build the frame first?
I don't know. I just been putting bricks
in the mud. Inner fortitude, as it were?
I built my house on sand.
You just stacked a bunch of bricks.
Right. I didn't even put mortar on them. It was...
This...
I didn't know. My whole family lives in danger every day.
This is... You live inside a Jenga tower.
We...
Good luck, my friend.
One stiff wind away from destruction.
So you talk about cleaning out your garage, and it made me think, because I started working in my office, and my office is just piled and piled full of, like, just junk mail and just everything that we...
I was going to say inspired brilliance.
It became the catch-all for everything that we didn't want in the other rooms of the house.
Gotcha.
So it just became, like, just piled up. And to where I couldn't even get work done in there. I was like, I can't, there's nowhere for me to be. There's nowhere for me to sit things down.
Yeah.
Every surface area is covered with things. And so I said, we got to work on this. So we did. We started working on it. But I have a fear of accumulating things.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's because I was raised around clutter.
Yeah.
And Curry was definitely raised around clutter. Her parents are pack rats. Not to the hoarder's point. Like, it's not unclean, but it's just, they have every knickknack. Every
paddywhack,
every give a dog a bone. They do. It's like just there's tunnels in their house of just pathways and stuff.
Yeah.
Her house growing up, of like, you can get to where you need to get, but everything else is going to be stacked up papers and books and random things. There's nowhere to sit a cup of coffee. Like, it's just everything's covered. And so, but it's funny that I grew up less around that, but I'm the more concerned about accumulating. I think it's because part of it's like, I don't want to have a consumer mindset of like, let's just go get these things that I think will make me happy. And then, you know, you just like, they suffocate you.
Yeah.
That's what you feel like. And so if I feel us starting to accumulate, I'm like, we need to give some of this stuff away. We need to whatever. We've not used this. And she's more like, what are you freaking out about? She'll challenge me on some of that stuff. But I've noticed an accumulation is starting to happen. We're in an accumulation season again.
Interesting.
And it's starting to panic me. So that's when you do the spring clean. You're like, all right, let's throw this away. Let's get this. And like, we got rid of a bed. We went to a bed that's lower to the floor because Toby couldn't jump up in our bed. So now we have this low, but our whole old bed frame is still like, part of it's in the garage. Part of it's leaned up against the wall on the opposite wall of our bedroom. Because how do you give away a bed frame? And how do you throw it away? You know, like, you can't give away a bed because it's like, you'll rent a bed in a hotel for $150 a night that 1,000 people have slept on, but you can't give away a mattress to Goodwill or a box springs.
Can you take a mattress or bed to the convenience center, the dump?
I don't know, but we're going to try. But I don't have a truck either. I've got a hatchback.
You want to know why? You don't want to know
it's
what
so
people
much.
Do. They're on the side of the road.
They just leave them
everywhere.
Right.
Because people
just
can't find a place.
Well, I don't
want to
be that person. So we've just stored them. But where do you burn it?
Your backyard.
No.
Burn a
I live
mattress.
In an HOA. You're going to get me kicked out of my neighborhood.
Burnt mattress. That's what we used to call
my friend Brent Mathis. We used to call him
Burnt mattress. Yeah.
But anyway, I just am thinking about like accumulating. But it happened again. Christmas, like, we're hard to buy for because if we want something, we'll just go get it.
Right.
Oh, I already got that. But my wife bought me something for Christmas. Like, I saw a charge, and I go, is this fraudulent? I have to call her every now and again, like, did you?
That's why it's so hard to surprise
her. And then she told me, she goes, it's your Christmas present. And I go, she goes, but it won't be here for Christmas. I go, okay, it's coming from Hong Kong or something. So I already knew it was going to be some weird something that she saw online.
Wow.
So it came last night. And my wife I have an issue. I have a bit about it, about how I clean my ears every day, and basically Q-tips are now just devices to scratch my brain. I put the Q-tip in until I touch my brain. I twist it till I go cross-eyed. I pull it out. Pray there's not blood. That's every day. Even when doctors look in my ear, they're like, looks good in here. Like, there's nothing in my ear.
They can see through to the other side.
I can see what you're thinking. I swab the heck out of my ear. So my wife bought me, have you seen these things where it's like a little, it's a camera on the end of a thing.
Guess what? I have one coming.
And it tethers to your phone.
Mine hasn't got here yet.
Yeah. So I was like, let's see. First of all, let's see if this is junk. Because the app that it comes with had 1-star reviews.
Oh, dear.
And I was like, all right, this is going to not work at all. But it does work. So I'm like looking in my ear last night, my hairy, nasty, middle-aged man ear. John, I could not find any wax in my ear. There's no wax. But it's got like a little plastic scoopy guy on the end of it where you can just, you know, find it and retrieve whatever.
See, my ears are filled.
Yeah.
And I can't get them out.
But as you're going, like, you've never seen that view. It's a weird view to look in your own ear hole. Mm. And I just thought, I don't know what I expected, but part of me was like, what if there's like a tiny guy going, hey, like just
get me out of here.
Random. They would scare. Yeah. Like what if there's a bug in there? We don't know.
Right.
Till you look in your ear. You don't know what, I did not expect that amount of hair. I'll say that.
Oh.
It's not coming out. I try to trim that area because, you know, middle-aged men, you're going to have, but I was like, inside there's a lot of hair. And it was a weird thing but I thought, you know, it really is. It's an odd, that was my Christmas gift from my wife. Because we didn't really do gifts this year. I was like, let's go somewhere. You know, so we went on a trip or whatever. We're planning a trip. But it's like, she bought me the let's investigate your ear camera.
Wow.
That was our...
Wow.
It's romantic in a way.
That's what marriage...
She's trying to take care of my... What do you call it? Ear health? Your cochlear...
Cochlear...
Your cochlear health.
There you go. Yeah, I'm about to go see a...
I've heard wax is actually good.
Really?
Like wax serves a purpose.
My ears...
You don't want too much.
I'll preach.
But there's supposed to be like a balance, a homeostasis that's achieved by having some wax. I can't deal, though.
I've
got itchy ears, just like the early
like
church.
The church at Laodicea or whatever. I don't remember who it was. I think I have too much.
You do?
Yeah, and I can't.
Well, wait till you get this thing. You're going to be able to clean some house.
I think I'm going to go see an audio. We have an audio.
I feel like we're grossing people out, but it's just earwax.
Guys, hey, if you're grossed out, this is adulthood, man. What do you want? I mean,
adulthood is being excited that you get to scrape wax out of your ears.
Yeah, like your spouse gave it to you, and you're like, this was the most romantic gift.
I get to see it happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know.
Interesting.
But now here's another.
I can't believe you had it so clean.
But it's one more gadget that I thought, this will end up in a drawer somewhere.
Right, because now you know there's no reason to clean your ears ever.
Like, we were cleaning the office out, and there was a device that was in a box. It was unopened, and it said what is called 2-in-1 adapter. And I look at it, and it's got Chinese writing all over it. And I opened the little booklet to see what it does. It was like the size of a postage stamp. It had a switch on it. It had a button that had power, that said power. I push the power button, and it starts blinking. I'm like, this is trying to connect to Bluetooth. What does it do, though? Like, what is it Bluetoothing? So, and I could not remember what I bought it for.
Well, just connect it and see.
I did. So then it had a headphone jack. I put in headphones, and it basically connected my phone to that device. So it's basically, if you don't have Bluetooth headphones, but you have wired headphones, it acts as a receiver.
Gotcha.
But I was like, when would I have bought this, and why would I have bought this? There are Bluetooth headphones.
What, did you buy it before Bluetooth headphones? There's no way.
I don't remember. And I probably spent $30 on this thing that I thought, well, I'll get this. It'll make my life better. And I literally did not even open the package.
Wow.
That's what I mean by accumulating. It's got to stop, John. I'm out of control.
Yeah. The other day, though, see, I've tried to throw things out, too.
Yeah.
Until the other day, my wife's shoulder was hurting, and we have like this shoulder.
You're like, throw it out. She did throw it. She threw out her shoulder.
She threw out her shoulder. She needed to plug up like this. She has this cold, it's this thing her dad had, or she had one from shoulder surgery. And it is that like a little tank.
Uh-huh.
And it's like the thing you get in the hospital.
Oh,
it
yeah.
Around your shoulder, and it you put ice in it, and it, you know.
Keeps cold air on the joint.
We could not find the power adapter to plug it in.
That's the fear of every man is if I throw this box of adapters away, I'm going to need one.
And I'm
one.
Pretty certain the last time I purged the garage, I had a box of adapters. I was like, you know what? No. And I threw it away. And I searched the house, the garage, the drawers, everything.
You'll never find it.
Couldn't find it. And
you're afraid of plugging the wrong thing in with the wrong polarity, and then like the thing just sets on fire.
I'm not afraid of that. If I
you're off got, by 2 amps.
If I could have forced a plug into there, I would have done it and just let bygones be bygones.
Good luck. Go ahead and fall asleep, sweetie. Hope everything's...
The ice will probably put out the fire. No, but I was like, well, see, this is why I hold on to things.
Right.
But that was...
It justifies that hoarder mentality.
But we did just get on Amazon and order like some universal plug, and it'll be here in like a day.
Okay.
So there's the other way now. For like $10, I can fix the problem.
Yeah.
Or you can hold on to everything. I think Amazon is probably diminishing hoarding.
You think?
Because it's like, look, if I need to get something else, I can have it delivered overnight,
yeah, right,
for free.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
So people are more likely to throw away now? I think hoarding is like a thing. I don't even know what it comes from. I bet there's therapists that could talk to it. Like, obviously, the last generation of hoarders could point to a scarcity mentality that came out of World War II.
Right.
Because, you know, if you pull a nail out of a board, you straighten it with a hammer and put it in a tin can in the garage. So you might need those nails.
Right.
I can get that person. If that person hoards, I'm like, I'm not going to talk my dad out of hoarding. Curry's dad. That ship has sailed. He is going to.
Yeah.
He's going to hang on to
generation.
Stuff. If he gets a hole in his socks, he's going to figure out how to fix the socks, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, or they're his favorite socks. Whereas I'd be like, Dad, it's a dollar.
Yeah, Laura's grandfather would wash out and reuse like plastic Ziploc
mm-hmm.
baggies.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
What's the point of wasting it?
Curry's dad currently has his iPhone, which I bought for him, and he is using, thank God. He has it in a Ziploc bag that is like all the air is pulled out of it and it's zip closed. And he said, that's his waterproof. I go, Dad, they make waterproof cases though. He goes, no, this is just as good. So he is carrying around. It's got all these floppy edges around it.
He's got a $1,000 phone in the baggie. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's, listen, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's even a little charming.
In some ways.
But if you did it, I'd be like,
hey,
John, we're in public. So I think there's a generational aspect to hoarding, sure. But then I think there's something like there's a break where what makes people hold on to things versus throw them away. And some people throw away, like you said, some people throw away too much stuff. And they're like, they got to go buy it again.
Yeah, it's a utility thing for me. It's not an emotional thing. Now, occasionally, I will say this. I had my dad's old GMC Denali.
Mm-hmm.
When he passed, Mom needed a different car where she could get in easier than climbing up into that thing. And she was going to trade it. They were going to give her like next to nothing.
Yeah.
We love old GMCs because they run forever. We already had one. We had a GMC, not Denali, but just a Yukon.
Mm-hmm.
So that one was an 04. That one was 02. Well, Dad's was an 04.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Johnny, he was a full 2 years.
You're moving on up.
Younger.
Yeah.
Then this was, mind you, 2018. And I thought, well, you know what? You can't buy a Denali anymore for less than like $85,000. And it's got all the stuff. So I put some money into that.
Yeah.
And I fixed it up and I got it painted. I did the whole deal. And for me, it was just a car opportunity because I thought, well, when can I ever spend this amount of money and drive around a Denali? And it's very comfortable and all those things. It was fun. But to me, it had no sentimental real. Mom would even ask like, hey, what do you... You know, I'm glad you get to drive your dad's car and stuff. You know, I was like, well,
it's not like it's a classic or anything that you want to hang on to because it's a 62 Firebird or something.
Right. But I thought I had no sentimental attachment to
it
until like finally this year we were like, hey, the air's not working in the summer, right? All those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went to the Jeep dealership and we were trading it in and she was getting a Jeep and I had to go clean it out.
Yeah.
I cleaned it out. And as I'm walking away, like I had a thing. Like,
yeah.
I was like, where is it?
It's like the finality of it.
When feelings hit me outside of my intellect, they're very surprising to me because I kind of feel like I can predict everything coming.
Right.
It's such a
Or you can overcome it with your mind like, no, this is not.
Right. There's no reason to think this way is what my brain says first. But then I'm like, what? I can't get away with that pit in my stomach feeling, you know, that is coming. And I was like, well, yeah, there's a connection to your dad here that you didn't realize this car held. So I think holding on to some things... occasionally for me will do that.
Yeah. Do you keep every card? Because we threw away some cards because we had like a stack of cards and stuff.
Curry goes,
I wrote you this card. Do you want to keep it? And she's holding the card. And I got to say to her,
no,
throw that card away.
but what you said to me back then means nothing.
But at some point, like she just goes, I don't remember even what I wrote in this card.
But you know how I fix it?
What?
If I went in doubt, I just take a picture of it and then throw it away.
Okay.
And now it's still in my records.
Yeah.
And someday looking through it, I'll see.
In the cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do that a lot. Old documents and stuff. Hey, that's fine.
That's a good idea.
Old things that Sadie drew.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we don't have to keep the original.
It meant something to you in the moment. That's the thing, like a card. I don't know. Card's tough. There was even a couple like gift books that she got me that were like, here's a funny pictures of animals, but they say, you know, sentimental things. And she got me a couple of those. She was like, what do you want? Are you ever going to look at this book again? I go, I can't imagine a scenario where I would look at that book again.
I think it's okay in marriage when you can be honest and say that. Like, hey, this is what it was.
But I wasn't like trying to get her to throw it away. She was saying to me, is it okay if we throw this book away? And I'm like, yeah, there's too many books in the world anyway. We were just real honest about how we feel about books.
Well, I appreciate that. I agree. It's interesting, though, all this talk of going back in the past.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a segment that we do.
John, we got to work on your segues. It's a segment we do called Talk About Then. That's right, John. That's This Week in History. And I got a couple of good ones for you.
All right.
January 4th, 1847. Can you guess what this one's going to be?
1847 is...
What if I said the name Samuel Colt to you?
Samuel Colt. Is this about the gun?
He made his first sale to the U.S. government.
Oh.
Captain Samuel Walker of the Texas Rangers had... Not the baseball
team. Colt 45?
Had just used Colt revolvers... And was impressed by them when his 15-man unit defeated 70 Comanches in Texas. He placed an order with Colt for 1,000 revolvers for use by the Rangers in the Mexican-American War.
Interesting.
So he had this military victory, and he was like, there's something to these guns. You know, I'm not a gun guy, so I got nothing. But I remember Colt. I know Colt is a revolver.
Yeah. You know, interestingly enough, that's a war people really have forgotten about, or they get confused with the Spanish-American War, which is like 1890s.
Yeah, I'm confused by that.
Yeah.
I thought they were the same.
No. And they also get it confused with the Alamo, which was actually in Texas's war for independence.
Not the Mexican-American War. I did not know that.
But the Mexican-American War, what's interesting about it, and you said 1847, is you're 13 years or so, 14 years before the beginning of the Civil War. The Mexican-American War is when almost all of the generals that you know of, North and South, fought together, because it was all the Union still in the Mexican-American War. So like, it's a war that Robert E. Lee and Ulysses S. Grant fought in on the same side. So let's let that sink in. Like, that was where they, and they almost all went to West Point together as well.
And they used Colts.
At some point.
They used Colt revolvers.
Yeah. Which Ulysses S. Grant, by the way, was a master equestrian.
Oh, really?
I think it was in that war that he became there was a battle happening that he needed to get a message to the other side of the field.
Yeah.
He did one of those, like, get on the horse and sloop down on the side away from the, so they can't see you, and like rode that way.
I do that, but when I'm trying to get on the horse, I can't get up any higher.
Yeah. I've seen
it. It just takes off and then you ride inside saddle. All right, John, here's one that just hits at our upbringing, and you'll remember it.
Oh.
Even though you're 5 years younger than me, 4.5 years younger than me.
Feels like less.
January 4th, 1987, Oral Roberts announces, God will call me home if I don't raise $4.5 million in 3 months. You remember this?
Is this when he went to the tower and locked himself away?
At the end of, I think he went on TV. I don't remember if he went to a tower.
At one point he went up into a tower, I thought, on the campus.
I don't remember, but he said, God will call me home. It was one of those things where televangelists are raising money every day. We can't, the budget just to get this out here. We're spreading the good word. And then it got crazier and crazier. And he literally set this goal of, if I don't reach $4.5 million in 3 months, God's told me. He's going to kill me, basically. And he declared his goal, but that God had told him he now had to raise a total of $8 million at the end of the 3 months. So at the end of 3 months, he said, look, now it's $8
million.
Wow. So God upped the ante. And he said, or I'm going to call you home in a year. So that's the difference. And I did not remember this part of the story. Do you remember what he raised?
$5
million. $9.1 million.
And how much longer did he live?
I do not remember when Oral Roberts passed.
That's a tough one. My commentary on this one is...
Yeah.
I'm going through the queue in my head.
It's a weird one for me because, like, I could say, oh, whatever. But the main thing I remember is it was one of the first times I was ever dealing... Because what I would have been? 13. And I was raised in this tradition of, whatever. What do you want to call a full gospel tradition of, televangelists were not something that I saw as charlatans. Right. I did not think of them in that way. I did not eye roll at Pat Robertson at that time in my life. My mom supported the 700 Club.
Yeah.
So this is one of the first times I remember having a whiplash moment of people outside of my sphere of belief having something to point at that said, something's wrong here. and I had no real defense for it.
Yeah.
So that was for me, it was a real touchstone moment where I went, and I started to question God, but you start to question like, okay, this feels like somebody that's just being manipulative. And yeah. I don't have a defense. When somebody comes and says, this is why I don't believe in God, I don't know what to do with this person because I have a hard time with this one too. I can't just be like, well, you got to trust.
Right.
I didn't trust it.
Right. We didn't have a lot of tools for holding our own ideologies accountable to their stated ideals.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so,
especially in that tradition, there was less accountability because it was like the anointed man of God is this oracle. And look what he says goes. And if we're going to speak against, we're speaking against God if we say this. It's like speaking against the prophet Isaiah or something.
Yeah, I told someone the other day, like that's where things got out of whack and can get out of whack with any of us is like the gospel is an upside down kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
So if you find yourself above the rules that are acceptable for everyone else because you're in leadership, like you actually should be more. I mean, I hate to use the word rules.
Yeah.
You should be more attuned. So if the highest ideal of the gospel is humility and servitude, then you should be the one most humble and serving, not, you know. And I'm not, here's the hard part. Like, I don't think we can question Oral Roberts' sincerity. Like, that's something we're not going to know unless he came out and talked about it. And sincerity does not make it right.
Yeah.
It actually makes it sad. To me, how many times have I done things sincerely?
Well, I mean, it'd always be different if he said, God told me that my ministry is losing effectiveness and I need to feed 4.5 million people in the next 3 months. That's not what he said. He didn't even say, this is where the money's going to go that I know of. It was just like, I got to raise this huge amount of money that there's no accountability for. And if I don't get it, then you guys are going to be responsible. He's almost putting it on the audience. You're going to be responsible for my death if you don't give.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people that we're giving are on fixed incomes. It's really, to me, I'm not going to hedge my bet on it. To me, it's super gross, and I don't feel bad about feeling like it's super gross.
No, I don't either.
Yeah.
No, what I feel bad for is people in my life in those days who may have not recognized it was gross and now feel foolish.
That's the hard part.
Or feel taken.
That's the hard part when you realize, when you start feeling foolish about something and you go deeper down the rabbit hole because you can't, your brain can't let you feel that feeling. That's what cognitive dissonance is. I'm trying to hold these two opposing beliefs, and that tension that I feel is the cognitive dissonance. So, you know, if you voted for a guy or you believed in a guy and then he shows himself to be something else, you're more likely to dig in deeper because of that. And I just wish it wasn't always that way. I wish we could grow out of some of that.
Yeah. And I do look at the generation that, you know, that raised us. And I do sometimes, like, those who are listening, and there are a lot, not just the podcast, I mean, but, like, listening to what's happening in the culture. I don't want them to feel like everything they ever did was always wrong.
Right.
Like, you want to go, hey, you know, there were charlatans, and there were people maybe who were sincere but still ended up the same outcome as charlatans.
Sure.
It's gross and all those things. And the fact that that system was in place, hey, let's make sure we don't have that. Where that system did damage, let's try to bring healing.
Yeah.
Let's where that system
you can reform.
Yeah. Where that system made mistakes, we should call it out and we should repent and make it right.
Yeah.
And let's build a different system moving forward.
Agreed. And I don't agree with people who just say, take the worst of something and say, this proves that it's not real because here's the worst of it. I always try to remember the quote that, like, religion is like a public swimming pool. A lot of the noise is coming from the shallow end.
Nice.
Like, we elevate voices that we shouldn't sometimes.
Yeah.
And then those voices are used against us by people who don't want to believe what we believe. But it doesn't always discount the beliefs. You got to look at so much good that's been done. So I don't necessarily, I just think that that is a huge misstep in the history of the culture we were raised in. So, all right, here's one. A couple more. Born January 4th, 1903, a German worker, George Elsner. Do you know who George Elsner is, John? He attempted to assassinate Adolf Hitler
in
1939 by placing a bomb near a podium where Hitler was to give a speech. Do you know this story?
Yeah, because this is, it's called, it's the one with Tom Cruise. They made a movie about it.
Valkyrie.
Yeah.
So, I did not know some of the details of this. It's pretty crazy. So, Hitler's going to give a speech. This guy knew it. And it was his yearly speech given on the anniversary of his...
No, because Valkyrie was about them. They were in some secret...
Okay. Yeah. This was given on the anniversary of his aboard of 1923 beer hall putsch. Anyway, Elser had built a bomb. This is great. With a 144-hour timer. He then spent several weeks secretly hollowing out a cavity in a stone pillar behind the speaker's platform where he knew Hitler planned on giving his speech. After installing the bomb, he set it to explode at 9:20 p.m., which would be halfway through Hitler's planned speech. This is all dependent on this 144-hour window. And so it's crazy, the accuracy of it. And then, but here's what happened. Due to a forecast of fog preventing him from flying back in the morning, Hitler moved his speech from 8:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. and shortened it from 2 hours to about 1 hour so that he could catch a train. He finished the speech and left the building 8 minutes before the bomb went off. And here's the other part. 8 people were killed and over 60 others were injured, but Hitler was unharmed. Elser was then captured that night, spent the next 5 years in a Nazi concentration camp, where he was executed less than a month before Germany surrendered. That's got to be what the movie's about, right? It's got to be about that. That's a crazy story.
No, the movie's no. It's like,
wasn't this story in Bonhoeffer too? I want to say Bonhoeffer talked about this.
I don't know about this. It's been a while since I heard Bonhoeffer.
Anyway, crazy story.
Yeah, wow.
144-hour bomb. You got to know, like, like no one could ever bomb us because we record at different times.
Right.
It's random.
You couldn't be like,
is Thursday good? So if somebody was planning on hollowing out this couch.
How would you hollow?
First of all, I'm pretty self-centered to think that I could be an assassination target. I think that's really the key. Here's the deal. It's all about words. You're a words person, okay? the words assassinate versus murder, okay?
Right.
It says a lot about what you are. It's really money, okay? The same thing with like
interesting,
crazy and eccentric.
Right.
You know? If you're spouting, you know, just insane things,
right,
but you're loaded, what an eccentric old coot.
Yeah.
Versus what a crazy person.
Or so, aggressive versus assertive.
I hope that I make enough money in my life.
To be assassinated.
To have someone say about me, can you believe that eccentric old man was assassinated? I hope that's what it comes to for me.
Johnny, we can only hope.
Okay, here's one that's got, this is an interesting one. General Tom Thumb, who was kind of a circus performer, P.T. Barnum discovered, a little person, 3.5 foot tall. His marriage to Lavinia Warren, who was 2.5 foot tall herself, made front page news, and had 10,000 guests.
Wow.
This is like when circus performers were like a big part of culture.
Yeah.
It was more of a ingrained in our culture. I did not know this part, though. The wedding couple was then received by U.S. President Abraham Lincoln at the White House.
Wow.
That just tells you, like, that's insane, right?
Yeah, that's a lot of, that's
it's a lot of fanfare.
Yeah.
For, you know, whatever he was to the
you
culture.
You were a notable couple.
Yes.
To be received.
All right, and finally, John, a couple of birthdays.
Hmm.
Born January 4th, Sorrel Book. Do you know who Sorrel Book is?
I don't.
He was on a show called The Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh.
And he played a character named Boss Hogg.
Oh, wow.
Do you know what Boss Hogg's first name actually was, though? I forgot about this. You'll love it.
No.
Jefferson Davis Hogg.
No
was
way.
His real name.
Oh,
they
wow.
went with Boss
yeah.
to take a little of the edge off.
Hey, speaking of, by the way, hold that thought.
Yeah.
Remember the whole Lee Victory Parkway thing?
Yeah.
So I was at Lee Victory Parkway last night.
Uh-huh.
When they told me the Starbucks I was riding at shuts down at 7 now
mm-hmm.
instead of 9. So I had to go find another Starbucks because I had 2 hours. So I'm driving.
It's right across the street.
And what is one street over
okay.
was General Forrest Circle.
Okay.
Nathan Bedford Forrest Circle. So if Lee Victory.
Lee Victory is just a dude.
Just a dude.
Named Lee Victory.
There happens to be, though, a street named after General
Nathan
Forrest.
Nathan Bedford Forrest, yeah.
Like,
so it's a reasonable assumption that it's about Lee, General
right, but this
Lee.
This whole thing's like, no, there's no way. It's just a guy.
No, no, no.
It's a cover story?
You think they made up a guy named Lee Victory just
know.
To.
I know that Curry says otherwise, but.
Curry's never lied to me.
That's what you think.
All right. Birthday. Last one. This is a death, notable death. Albert Camus was a French Nobel winning writer,
yeah.
philosopher. Famous quote. I think this is an apt quote for us, John. Don't walk behind me. I may not lead. Don't walk in front of me. I may not follow. Just walk beside me and be my friend.
Wow.
Hmm?
Isn't that...
I wish you would take that to heart just
once.
I was thinking
I wish you would. Like, I'm sick of you walking.
I'm sick of walking in front of you and trying to have you think I'm leading.
Because I'm not following. I was just confused why you're zigging and zagging.
Walk beside me. Be my friend.
Hey, who said that? Whose joke is it? Because you know what? I keep bringing up all these jokes from our childhood. And you're like, that wasn't really mine. And you keep devastating me because you just misled me and lied all those
years. That's not true, John.
But the joke was, if you're going to walk a mile.
Oh, right. I don't know. Nobody knows. That's like, I would call that a street joke.
Is it a street joke?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead and tell that.
It's before you criticize a man, walk a mile in his shoes. That way, when you do criticize him, you're a mile away and you have his shoes. Roy told a story. I need to tell, because we're talking about our buddy, Pastor Roy, who is retiring from children's ministry. And he has the funniest stories because he was an actual carny. He worked in a carnival. And he had just the funniest street jokes and stories. And there's one that I remember. He said that his dad picked up a hitchhiker. They picked up hitchhikers all the time. Yeah. It was just part of what they did. He said they picked up a hitchhiker and the guy only had one shoe. And so they get going. They pick up the guy. He gets in. And they get going 5 miles down the road. And his dad finally goes, all right, I got to ask. Did you lose your shoe? And he goes, nope, found one. That is amazing.
That's great.
It's all about perspective, John.
Isn't it, though?
You know?
And you know what, listener? We hope that your perspective of the podcast has brought you to a place of joy in the new year.
We hope you found a shoe.
Yeah.
As it were.
Maybe you're thinking, I feel like I'm limping through this thing. Maybe the limp is good because you found something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
At least one of your feet doesn't hurt.
Yeah. The metaphor has its limits.
Yes.
But you know what doesn't have its limits, Johnny? The worldwide interwebs.
That's right. And you can find all the archived episodes on talkaboutthatpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Anywhere.
The podcast store.
Yeah. You should go check out Johnny's comedy. If you haven't watched his two Dry Bar specials or his Amazon special, you should go to johnnyw.com.
Those are all available. I think they're even on YouTube now. So
yeah.
You can just type me into YouTube.
Yeah. Check out his Linktree. There's all kinds of things out there.
John has books on Amazon. Over 30,000 books.
Guys, it's written. Unbelievable.
Many tomes. Full of knowledge and language. And
yeah.
Mostly in English.
Mostly.
No, John's great. And new books coming out. And some new projects you're working on now that are a little bit down low right now. Can't talk about. A little non-compete, non-disclosure.
You know what I mean? None of that. All that was nonsense. Okay. I do have a pretty exciting pitch coming up.
Yeah.
I'll talk about it. If not, then never shall be spoken of. But
is it like on Shark Tank?
No, but it is like a little beyond my norm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of to me, when you tell me about it, it's like a bucket listy kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I'm excited for you.
Yeah. So like if you could think through the vagueness, maybe say a prayer for old John.
Yeah.
In the next few days.
Please send him up.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Hey, but we also are so grateful to be a part of the Life Audio Network and want to thank them for their partnership with us on this podcast. You can go to lifeaudio.com and you'll find dozens of other podcasts and their network. They got all kinds of shows about parenting, or they got Bible study shows, pastoral shows, lots of cool stuff happening at lifeaudio.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, guys, thank you for taking the time. Be on the lookout for some bonus content that's going to be released pretty soon.
Yeah.
You get more talk about that.
We're going to make a little miniature episodes that we're going to release from time to time.
Yeah.
For those of you people who want a little bit more throughout your week.
Just a little bit more. Mm. Just a bit more. Hey, we'll give you just a bit more on the regular episodes next week on
Talk About That.
Are you concerned about tensions in the Middle East? Do you wonder where we're currently at in the biblical timeline? Are we really in the last days? Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Carl Muller with the Inside the Epicenter podcast. Every week, my co-host, best-selling author Joel Rosenberg, and I answer those questions and more. You'll hear inside knowledge of our meetings with leaders at the highest levels of government in the U.S., Israel, and the Middle East, equipping you to filter the news with biblically sound insights. Find Inside the Epicenter on your favorite podcast app or go to joshuafund.com to listen and subscribe.